Hello and welcome to Enlighten My Loafers, Season 2 Mailbag Edition. I am your host, Brett White, and I am joined once again by producer extraordinaire, the master of the webs, Spider-Man! Benjamin.
Hello, Brett.
Peter Raghib.
Hello.
Is it okay to toss your middle name out there?
I mean, I think the real challenge for the identity thieves is going to be the spelling of my last name, so yeah, I'm not too worried about the middle name. No,
and your social security is.
that make it that easy.
It's like, what is the name of your first pet and the street you grew up on?
Welcome to the Security Questions Podcast, where we ask you.
So on Twitter, I think Mike Trapp, formerly of College Humor, posted a screen grab of one of those things, and one of the prompt questions, it was like, first pet, street name, etc. And then what was least favorite guest at your wedding? And part of me was like, is this a joke? Like, did he write these, or is this an actual one he saw somewhere? We'll never know.
Could be both. I mean, that would definitely, hopefully that's one of the ones where they give you lots of options. Like, you can also, you choose the question.
Oh, yeah, it was like six different options, but one of them was least favorite guest at your wedding, which I honestly don't know how I would answer that. Because I think the person that was going to be my least favorite didn't show up because they weren't invited, even though they tried it. Fun.
Yeah. Well, no, the trick is you have to come up with an answer that you have to be very confident your thought process will not change.
Oh, exactly.
Right. Which is always kind of tricky, especially if you, I think you and I are both overthinkers.
Really?
That's very definitely risky that we'd like stare at the question and then come up with like what we think. We'd like think for 2 minutes and come up with like what's like, you know what, that's the right answer. And then like, you know, months from now when you need to reset it, you're like, cannot reconstruct that path of logic. Yep.
Well, even things like, I need to make sure that I type it out like in proper, you know, capitalization, not, you know, did I do it all lowercase? I'm like, no.
You know what? I don't think those things, if they're properly
doesn't matter.
It shouldn't matter if they're properly designed, but then they don't tell you that. So yeah, that's like another thing to make you worry about. But like, yeah, there's no reason that they should make those case sensitive because it's like, that's not the point.
Yeah. So yeah, this is the end of season two. Another successful season. So let's just get into it. This episode is taking a little bit to get a mailbag episode out because the world's falling apart.
We're holding it together.
Yeah, we're holding it. So yeah, this is we are both sequestered. We are Skyping. How's your shut-in going?
My shut-in.
Yeah.
If you like, I said. Well, so I'm very fortunate that I have a job where I can work from home. And I've been doing that at least one day a week in the past for a while. So this past week was my first week where I was 100%. Was that 100%? No, I went in on Monday, but then Monday. Yeah. So Monday was my last day. I went to the office. And then I'm pretty bad about not, I need to do a better job of, you know, coming up with getting dressed and going outside. And not sort of letting myself be a schlub all day.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy for me and very comfortable. But no, like, I think for people, you know, if you haven't been following the advice on these things, right, it's like, it's fine to go out and, you know, breathe the air. It's just really about sort of being in close proximity to people. So, like, definitely, there's no reason why I shouldn't, like, still kind of get out and walk a little bit.
Enjoy what looks like very good weather.
Yeah, that's another thing.
I've not experienced it.
You've not experienced the weather?
No, I've only gone outside. So I've been working from home since last Friday. So a week and a day, except I had to go in to the office for a couple of hours on Tuesday to shoot a video thing that hopefully will go somewhere, but I don't know. So I was in the office for like 2.5 hours and I immediately went home. So, that actually segues nicely into a topic that I think, I don't know if you suggested in jest via text last night, but like how to dress up during a quarantine.
Yeah, well, or at least like kind of talk about the motives there, because I think one of the things that people, you know, when you, people talk about working from home or and that kind of thing, there's a lot. I mean, like, I think. It's not very controversial. The idea that you should get up and get dressed, even if you're not leaving the house.
Yes.
Like, don't just sort of roll out in your pajamas and stay in your pajamas all day, because like it doesn't feel very good, even if like you're not thinking about it in terms of like presenting yourself. The real core of it, right, is like the whole idea about like who are you getting dressed for.
So like I worked from home from October 2013 to April 2017. So it's almost 4 years, like 3.5 years.
Yeah.
Which was a nightmare. So people that are just now, hopefully this is not going to go 3 years. So you will all be fine. You will enjoy your little dip into the work from home pond and you'll be good to get out and go walk amongst the land again in a couple weeks, hopefully. Whereas I was drowning in that for 3 years, and I am an extroverted person. So that was a hell for me. Like, and then also just trying to live through, it's like, oh man, 2020 is awful, but remember how bad we thought 2015 and 2016 were too? So like, so it was also, it was just a lot. But I would get up. I still had a 9-to-5 job, even though it was air quote permalancing, so I didn't have any insurance, which is illegal. Shady. So I did that, but I would shower, or I would work from like, you know, 9 to 11 and then shower and like get dressed and stuff. Like usually before noon every day, I was in clothes.
First thing on your, here's my problem, or a thing that's tough for me, right, is like, what am I trying to say? Like if you're working from home, right, then like you have these moments, like there's like doing the work and there's like being present on like Slack or email. And then there's like actually having like a call where it's like, okay, you definitely have to be like, you can't let me get in bed.
Like my husband's making up the bed. Like his desk is in our bedroom. So it's like when he has phone calls, he like actually makes the bed, puts on a shirt. Like, well, he wears a shirt all the time, like, but yeah, like he makes sure the background, he like looks business casual. So yeah, he's going that extra mile.
Is it just, I feel like Seb would make the bed.
Oh, even if
the bed was in the other room off camera.
No. I mean, maybe now under this work from home regime, but that bed is only made when we wash it, when we wash the sheets. Glimpse into the life. But like, so this week, so yeah, working from home rules tend to also, I guess, go for quarantine. Quarantine. I can't believe this is our fucking lives that we have to talk about. Anyway, if you just went back like 6 months ago, it's like, yeah, cool. In a couple months, everyone's going to be talking about quarantining and social distancing. It's like, what? I guess that makes sense because everything is a nightmare. I didn't really get dressed up most of the week, but then I did decide. I was like, no, I am going to turn looks, shouting back to the first mailbag episode. Maybe every day, maybe every other day, I don't know, just because it is honestly like, this isn't the same as working from home was in 2013, 2014, 2015, because that was like, it was just me, like I had a job and I worked from home, I permalanced, etc. This is, everything is, NBA is canceled, New Mutants is not coming to theaters, I don't care about the NBA, but I care about New Mutants. You know, like every, like NCAA, all these sports things are canceled. Production's halting on every TV show. Like this is everything is ground to a halt, next level kind of catastrophe. You know, government not responding or not caring and just like that kind of like slow motion Chernobyl, you know, like slow, like kind of thing. So it does feel like there is more of an impetus to do anything to distract you, to do anything to bring any type of frivolous joy into your life. And so I was like, that means I am going to try to make an effort to actually get like dressed up and take photos, probably post more images, just again, distractions, and self-care. That's what it really does come down to.
I think you undersell it when you call it a distraction. I mean, I think in a way, like Instagram being a alternative. I mean, so like, you know, we talk about like whether you're doing it for, you know, who are you doing it for, yourself or for others, but like,
right,
you know, but having it be a, I think the line, you can basically, you're other people can see you through Instagram,
exactly,
right?
Yeah, like Instagram kind of is doing it for others.
It blurs the line of like, what is it, like, are you actually visible or not? You know, yeah. And I don't think, and people kind of knock that as being frivolous or, you know, self-centered or whatever, but I don't think that's entirely true. Actually, one of the funny things, I remember the story, this is old. Basically, I'm going to butcher this because it was like, it's still a fuzzy memory, but I remember listening to, I think it was one of the founders of, it was a founder of some other app that's not Instagram. And they were writing about how they made some app that was like all about like, do you remember when check-ins were a thing?
Oh, Foursquare.
Yeah.
Oh, gamify my day.
Foursquare was the king of check-ins. It might've been Foursquare, but it might've been somebody working for a different one. Cause there was a point where it was like everyone. What's that?
Cause then Foursquare like spun off into, was it Hive or something?
Yeah, I don't want to make this into like startup gossip.
It was
whatever.
Bullshit is what it
but
was.
The point was that like he was talking about the actual like founding of the, you know, in the very early days when they were figuring out the company, and their thing was like they were doing a check-in thing, and their idea was like, we want to sort of make it so the app can like help people like sort of share their experience with the other people, and that was their idea. Share your experience with your friends. Hmm. And they sort of focused on this convoluted check-in thing and all the location lookup stuff about like, you know, trying to figure out where you are and like what, you know, name of the restaurant and put it on a map and all that. And they realized like, it basically, they sort of were working really hard on this and tried to have a big debut. And it was the same, it was at South by Southwest, which was like the same debut where like Instagram hit it big.
Now that's been canceled for this year.
Not my point.
Yeah,
my point
but
was
hey,
like,
just...
but they realized, but they, here's the thing. The point is Instagram was exactly, it was doing the same mission.
Yeah.
Which was about like helping, like connecting with your friends and like sharing your experience. But all Instagram was doing was like photos. It was just like, I'll take a photo and let my friends see it. And he realized like, The realization was that like, oh, they were doing all this like complicated stuff about this like check-in mechanic and figuring out location stuff, but like the picture, like the visual is like does so much of the work of that, and they kind of forgot the bigger picture, and they kind of derided it as like Instagram is just a bunch of photos, but like it's not just a bunch of photos. Like it matters that it's like it's a photo you took that you shared to people so people can see you.
Yeah.
Right. And like that's the thing that makes it, it's more than just anyway. So to roll all the way back to like, you know, it giving it. You wake up, you decide you're going to turn a look, and then you have a venue to like
show it, even though I'm not.
That look.
Yeah, I'm not going into an office. I will also burst the bubble and say by like 1 p.m. on Friday after getting up and putting on a whole thing, I was out of it.
Out of
I didn't
it.
Stay in all day. But, you know, hey, it was still there for 4 or 5 hours.
That's all right. I mean, that's still
something.
I mean, if you're in an office at 1 p.m. on Friday, you probably loosened your tie, right? Like, it's not like that's a unique, you know,
no, I do feel like a weird cheat because even when I go into the office, I then take off my sport coat / blazer, which we have a question about that later. I do take that off as soon as I get there and don't wear it the rest of the day. And in my head, I felt this like pang of guilt of like, but everyone on Instagram liked the outfit with this key thing that I then take off. Like, but that's, you know, that's why that's why one goes to therapy, because they obsess over weird details like that.
All right. Well, how about this? Since you mentioned there is a question and we should get to the questions.
Oh.
Let's do it. So
you want to just jump into that specific one?
Yeah. So First Draft Crafts asked. This is a multi-part. I'll read the whole thing.
Yeah. Go
Where
for
do
it.
You get? Was it? Okay. Well, I'll just read it. Where do you get a lot of your sport coats / jackets? I love my suit jackets, but as I understand it, sport coats are cut a little differently to be looser in the arm sleeve area. You have inspired me to step up my work wardrobe, and I'm looking at where to start. Thanks.
I didn't have to include that last part, but I did because it's a compliment. That was, I just wanted to feel good.
You should. Like, you have, like, no, yeah. That's nothing. Don't be, you don't apologize for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So first of all, the suit jacket versus sport coat, and then also versus blazer versus, what are the other names for them? This is a whole thing that I want to get into, because I don't know the differences. I've Googled them. I feel like different sites have different definitions, even to the point where I think on the Adam Conover episode, I like quoted him and I put with a quote on the Instagram, and then a listener commented to be like, does he mean sport coat instead of blazer? And then it's just like, man, you know what? Maybe. I don't know. And I would defer to Adam, because Adam Conover is, his whole thing is being studiously over knowledgeable, over prepared, etc. But then again, I don't know, like, you know, what information he's read that's led him to call a sport coat a blazer, if they can be used interchangeably. Etc. Well,
he's hinged his reputation on doing research and telling you what he's like believes is the correct answer. So
I do love if one of our users ruined Adam.
I don't really know anything about this, but this definitely feels like the type of thing where, you know, there's like a bunch of
soda, pop, coke.
There's different words for a thing. And there's also different versions of that thing. And like the reality of it is just like they've all sort of organically, people just use different words for these things historically or from different countries, and they come together. Mm-hmm. And then sort of after the fact, somebody whose impulse is to like put order, they want to like organize the world.
Yes.
They decide, they sort of just like make up their mind that like sport coats are like this and jackets are like this and blazers are this. And they like come up with a way to organize it, and then they just put that out there like as the answer. Mm-hmm. And the problem is like three people do this simultaneously in different parts of the world.
That's
and then you kind of end up with this mess. And then the worst part is like somebody who finds one of those things and buys into it, and then they bump into somebody else, and then you kind of end up you either have like turf wars, or you just feel like you're an idiot because you listened to the wrong person.
Yeah.
And so my sense is that probably this is that kind of thing.
I think,
I don't know.
Yeah, I think maybe for season three, I should ask this of more people just to get what their take is. So that is that's a thing to unpack. But where do I get a lot of my sport coats and jackets? The ones I have now, Amazon. So this is again, this is another unpacking and demystifying things and dealing with my own hangups is, in my head, I'm ashamed of getting a lot of sport coats from U.S. Polo Association on Amazon for $70 a coat. They're not, you know, made to measure or vintage or, you know, more expensive. And even like money isn't even really the thing, because a lot of vintage coats are cheaper than what you would get on Amazon. But it's just like I would like to be able to say, it's a vintage 1940s, etc. Like that kind of thing. They're not. And people like how they look. So I should not give a fuck is the.
Have you gotten any of those tailored?
Well, see, I did talk about, so in the challenge update that you suggested I do, which is your job as a producer. No, thank you. Like that was one of the things, like, I was like, I'm just not going to release an episode this week. And you're like, oh, you could do this. And I was like, good, I'll do that. Yeah, I did get one of them tailored, and it was a whole ordeal. I'll get into this into the season three episode that I've already recorded with Jeremy Kirkland of Blammo. We talk about, I spent $300 getting a $70 blazer tailored. Mm-hmm. And I don't even really like how it fits still. So, hey, oh, good.
Well, what's the lesson for that?
Find a cheaper tailor. Work?
Well, hold on. No, because I'm saying, I want to address the fact that you're like, you know, feel shame for like getting this, you know, getting this cheaper stuff, you know, mail order or whatever. And like, well, I don't know. Is it shame because of like Amazon in particular, or just the fact that it's like ordering it online?
Yeah. Well, and I also, God, it is a lot of label envy. Like, I want to be able to say, like, this is a, you know, name of a thing that's going to make people go, oh, you know, But I guess I should also have the reverse of like, hey, this is actually a cheap ass fucking thing from Amazon. Boom, boom, boom.
Well, here's the thing. I think it would be cooler if you were name dropping a tailor rather than name dropping the, you know, raw material.
That's true. The person that helped actually make it fit to my body.
Because I feel like, here's the thing. I recently, I don't know. I think I bought something recently that somebody was like suggesting. It was probably you. Like the idea of getting your clothes tailored.
If
just
it was
sounds...
someone telling you to get something tailored, it was probably me.
It was probably you. But the point is like that. It's like I'm, you know, like that is not a thing that is. It just sounds like such an absurdly lavish thing. But the idea. But the thing is, right? Like, I don't know. I feel like that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Go buy a, you know, go buy a cheap thing that is close to what you need. Then get it adjusted. That's way more sensible than, you know, getting everything handmade from scratch. Like that's would be great, yeah. But also like incredibly expensive.
The new thing that yeah. I am doing. But since I got this question, I have also been. So I took all the jackets that fit me, and even mm-hmm. the ones that don't fit me. So I basically took all my sport coats, suit coats, everything, and I measured all of them. You know, sleeve length. Shoulder length, chest length, length from top to bottom. I think also waist. I measured all of them. I noted which ones were tailored and which ones weren't so that I would know, like, in theory, a tailor has said this fits my body. Mm-hmm. And then I took the average of all the ones that are tailored. So I have a rough estimate of what my measurements should be. Especially sleeve length is my major thing. So I think I have shorter arms. So now I go on eBay and I look up vintage sport coats on eBay, and every eBay listing for a sport coat has those measurements on it. So mm-hmm. now I feel a lot more comfortable going on eBay and buying things off of eBay because I know if the seller says the sleeves are 23 inches, then I will buy it or save it. If they say they're 24 inches, I'm not going to fuck with it. 22 inches? Nope. Only if it's 23. So like that helps narrow things down a lot in terms of the noise of eBay. And so far, it's worked. I've gotten one, and it came, and it actually fits. So that helps.
Cool.
Other thing I wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
My work project. My project around my coverage at work that I'm very proud of. I feel like we can, like, jump back to questions as they come up naturally, maybe. Right?
Yeah, we can do that. Well, I don't know. It sounds like you're prepping for something big. What am I?
I'm just
sort of playing a drum roll. Or
God,
what,
I just want to talk about it because I want everyone to go look at it.
Okay.
I don't know who listens. I went through and so everyone knows Project Runway, this reality show that's been on for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
The season finale was this past week, March 12th for season mm-hmm. 18. And in the lead up to it, I ranked all 59 season finale runway shows. So there have been 17 previous winners, but every single season three or four people show.
Yeah.
And with Project Runway, a lot of times the second or third place person should have won, in my opinion. So I did all 59 Project Runway season finale runway shows ranked, which everyone should go look at on decider.com, because it was a ridiculous amount of work, Ben.
No, that's a big cut. That is. I mean, in ranking them, do you feel? I mean, you're saying right, like often the you think the best person didn't get first place,
mm-hmm.
and I imagine a lot of that's due to the fact that it's just like really hard to make it's a lot of close calls.
Well,
right?
Season 8 was a notorious close call.
So, like, do you have more sympathy for the judges now that you've done it across 59 people?
Not some cases.
No.
Well, which is, so like, I guess, I actually do think, and this could turn into a reality show podcast for a second, but I actually do think that judging a Project Runway is, for the most part, fair. Mm-hmm. Drag Race is a reality show first and like a talent competition, like third or fourth. Like it's, mm-hmm. so when Drag Race is at its best, the puppet strings of the producers are fishing line and you can see through them. In recent seasons, they've been chains. Like, usually, like, you watch a season, like season 5 or 6 of Drag Race, and yeah. it gets to the end and it all feels like, yeah, that made sense. And then when you hear more behind the scenes stories and, like, you hear more you start learning the behind the scenes stuff, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, that was manipulated. Awesome, cool. Whereas in more recent seasons, you can just see the manipulation happening, like people winning challenges and then going home, and it's like, what the hell? In the same episode? And it's like, what? So, but Project Runway, I feel like, has always been the people that go home genuinely usually are like, I can visibly see why they are going home. The look was unfinished. It was, you know, derivative, et cetera, et cetera. And also, usually the people that make it to the runway, it's not a guarantee that they have like a fun TV ready personality either. I do love that Project Runway still casts, and I say this lovingly, boring people. Like people that don't make for good TV, but they make good clothes, and Project Runway still has them on. And I think that's a super cool thing.
Oh yeah.
Like they don't
like
just
you said, it's a competition first, not a show.
Yeah. Whereas Drag Race is very much like, even if the queen is garbage, if they are funny and like giving you great talking heads,
mm-hmm.
even if their looks are garbage and like the audience doesn't really like them, they'll still stick around. It's whatever. But so, yeah, I went through and I ranked all 59, and my top, I think my top four are all people that came in second or third or fourth place. My
top 59, just Project Runway, because we keep jumping back and forth, but of the designers on Project Runway.
Yeah. So the top four on my list did not win their seasons, and I'm very proud of that.
Because it shows that you exercised independent judgment in your ranking.
And right. People can go back and listen to season two episode with Kelly Dempsey from Project Runway, because,
mm-hmm.
spoiler alert, she's number two on my list of 59.
Oh.
And she came in second on her season, so...
All right. Well, don't give away too much more. Let people go look it up and read it.
Yeah.
Let's get back to a question.
Ooh.
I'm feeling self-conscious about that.
Yeah.
Let's do a very simple. What should be very simple.
Should be, but you never know.
Kirk asks, when should you wear a necktie, or bow tie, or cravat, or ascot? Also, for my, I like. What are the? How would you, in a nutshell, describe the difference between all the four of those things?
See, this and is then, also mm-hmm. another sport coat blazer jacket thing in some way. I think so.
Well, a necktie versus an ascot. I feel like that's pretty.
No,
is that pretty
so
clear?
I think,
or is it one of those things where it's like there's, you know, there's borderline things where it's like you don't really know.
No, I think it's the difference between cravat and ascot. I think because I think that cravat is the umbrella term for everything that you wear around your neck. Let me Google that, because that's what I feel like I read at one point, because I did want to know what the difference was. Cravat, a short wide strip of fabric worn by men around the neck and tucked inside an open neck shirt, or historical, a necktie. So the historical definition of cravat was a necktie.
Ah, so yeah, it's one of those where it's like, it's a larger...
Yeah.
It's become a more narrow term over time.
So a cravat and ascot are interchangeable. And sometimes cravat used to be like a type of necktie, but history has changed that. So for me, I say anytime, anywhere, go for it, anything, all time. Like,
they're all mutually exclusive, right? You can't wear a necktie and an ascot.
I mean, if you want to, try it. I mean, that's a lot around your neck. That's a lot around your neck. God, I'm now picturing that. That would be ridiculous.
All right, because we got three. Because there's at least three. Okay, so if we're saying cravat and ascot are basically the same thing, then we got three things that are fairly clear here: necktie, bow tie, ascot. Can we add bolo? Yeah. I'm gonna add bolo tie.
Oh God, yeah. So I mean,
like, are they totally interchangeable, or are there situations where you definitely?
Yeah. I guess, so I will go with myself, because you know what, I can only speak to my experience. I think, like, necktie is good everywhere. I think you can, like, you know, basically I'm thinking, like, wedding, funeral, work. Mm-hmm. Wedding, funeral, work, and play. Are those the four categories, essentially, in life?
Wedding, funeral, work, and play.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think that you can wear a necktie to all of those. Play, of course, like... That depends on your personality. I am a person that would just put on a necktie and then go to a movie. So, you know, I think you can wear it to all those. Bow tie, I think, is a little bit more restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it all comes down to like how much of the statement you're making. I think like a necktie is still, you know, even though there are like, I never understand all the like the necktie is dead kind of arguments that go around. This is a thing. This is a thing in like the world of like fashion and menswear and stuff, is there are these cyclical trends of like the suit is dead, the tie is dead. But me being, I guess, a newcomer or someone that doesn't maybe pay as close attention, I see people dropping that information, taking it for granted, like, hey, well, everyone knows the necktie is dead. And I'm like, wait, when was that decided? I don't understand that. Okay. So I think that because of that, I don't even know where my train of thought just went totally off. A necktie is still, people, when you think neckwear, that's the default. So that means it is more, it's not going to be jarring visually than like a bow tie or an ascot.
Well, I think that's important to the when should you wear question.
Right,
because
exactly.
A necktie is not, you wear a necktie because everyone else is wearing a necktie.
Yeah.
And then you have like a range of like, if you want to stand out wearing a necktie, there's like a range. Obviously, like it's a canvas. You can have a different color. You can have a pattern. You can have
you can have lights sometimes.
Picture a flying toaster. You can have LEDs.
Yeah.
Like there's
a beer cozy.
And actually, yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's a more interesting, maybe that takes for granted that like all the big range of a necktie. Cause it actually like, yeah, like in terms of surface area, right, a bolo, like a bow tie is a lot smaller, and a bolo tie is even less, you know, to work with. Yeah. There, ascot, I think, probably similar, but I think there's a bigger question there about when you should wear those. I think depends on what you want to do. You want to be seen, because I think wearing a necktie in a lot of situations is about wearing the necktie because other people are wearing the necktie because you want to conform.
Unless you're me, and then you can wear them to stand out.
I'll stick up for conformity also. I don't, it's not always the wrong thing to want to fit in. You know, you can, there's good reasons for it.
Well, no, it's a it can be protection. That's like, mm-hmm. So that's where bow tie, like I personally would not wear a bow tie to a funeral.
Probably not.
No.
Unless it's already your thing, that wouldn't be the debut. Right. For your bow tie.
If you're that, that guy that testified during the impeachment hearings. Oh God. Who was that guy? Remember that, right? Like that dude. Oh God, I loved him. I was like, good for you, wearing a bow tie to an impeachment hearing. He made waves.
I should know that, but like that's totally the thing I should know. But I listened to a lot of that on audio. I didn't watch.
Oh no, I saw him in a bow tie, and I was like, go for it, queen, work it.
So here's the thing: are bow ties political? Because I hear bow tie, honestly, the thing the picture that pops into my head, and this is probably not the same for everybody, but for me, I think of Tucker Carlson.
Yep.
Because for a long time, that was his signature thing.
Hey, this ties into a question we got coming up later, too.
All right.
Well, we can hold off on that in a second. But yeah, no, think that, so there are definitely those kind of, this is why bow ties are a little bit more of a minefield, because there are a lot of public figures, like also Bill Nye the Science Guy is a bow tie person.
See, that's, if I was a better, that's what I
so it, but
thought
like
of.
It is like a bow tie can conjure up both Tucker Carlson and Bill Nye, and I think you can't find two more diametrically opposed people. You know what?
Here's some interesting thing though. Both of those people, they want to be seen as like quirky and different.
Yes. Yep.
But they also do not want to compromise their credibility.
Yeah.
Both of those are people that like are in necktie worlds and they want to stand out, but they don't want to be too, they don't want to be too crazy.
They're not going to wear a bolo tie or an ascot, definitely.
Yeah. Or at least, like, yeah, in those worlds. So
or
I think
neckerchief.
Like,
oh, boy. Didn't even get into that.
Who's our template for, is there a contemporary person wearing ascots?
Paul F. Tompkins. And myself.
And it's just you two own it.
I mean, I think what you said about bow ties is exactly what I was going to say, is in a necktie world, you wear a bow tie to stand out.
Mm-hmm.
So you wear a necktie to conform to necktie world. You wear a bow tie to stand out from necktie world. and then you wear an ascot if you don't give a fuck, I think is where we're at now, which is, so the ascot, and I think we talked about this in the Fine and Dandy episode from season two, because they make amazing ascots. I have two. I constantly want more because I get a lot of, previously all my ascots have come from Amazon, which they are made cheaply, and they are cheap, and they're made of like polyester, and they get really hot, and they're really thick, so they're not good. Whereas the Fine and Dandy ones are, I think, a type of silk, and they are a lot thinner, and so therefore they are not as cumbersome and hot and sweaty. So I like them; they're good. But we talked about how the ascot has gone on this journey of like in the, and you watch, if you watch a bunch of old sitcoms, you see this: the ascot from like the 40s to the 70s was casual. Like it wasn't formal. It was when Larry Tate, like on Bewitched, he wears a necktie at work, and then when he comes over to his employee Darren's house, which he does way too much, he spends every Christmas and Thanksgiving with them, which is like, dude, you're married, why are you over here? But when he does, he always comes over, he's wearing slacks, a button-down shirt, a cardigan, and an ascot every time.
Do you think that's intrinsic to the ascot because it is a looser, like just physically looser, yes, right? A necktie is tight around your neck. It is business.
Yeah.
And an ascot is a looser thing. Do you think, like,
I think that is what it was. But I think,
so
because
you don't think it's like a, just a hat, like that just coincidentally, that's what people
associate with. No, I think it makes sense. Because they still wanted to have something. You want to have some business going on up there, because otherwise it's just like an open shirt and that can look weird. I do have some shirts that, like, if I don't button the very top button, the distance between the top and second button is just a little too much. And it's like, that's just a weird, you know, at that point, it's like you got to either unbutton that button or wear an ascot. Like, you have to either go full 70s, like my shirt is open, or you need to do something. But I think because ascots fell out of favor, you know, in like the 80s and 90s, they started getting really, really associated with like aristocracy and like rich villains. Nowadays, if you're on, if a new TV shows signify villainy by having a person in an ascot, which I do not like. And this was also the case in the 60s, because like Gilligan's Island, the millionaire, is always wearing an ascot. He isn't exactly the villain of that show. Like, I think the island is the villain on that show. No, poor planning. Gilligan is probably the villain of that show, to be honest, foiling all their attempts to get out. But as it became more rare, it became seen as more aloof. And I think now an ascot is seen as like the most formal of formal. And it's like, you know, you would only wear that if you're going to a country club or like a red carpet thing, or and not even like, because like people don't wear them to the Oscars. They're like, I don't know. Paul F. Tompkins wears them because he's dressed to the nines every day. And he wears them like to perform, like on stage for his shows and stuff. I wear them all the time with like jean jackets and, you know, a polo shirt. Looks like you can do, I've worn them to, I don't think I've ever worn them to a wedding, but like I've worn them through them to like formal premiere events and stuff. So I think they're the most versatile of all the neckwear, and I want more people to adopt them. So, Kirk, you can wear ascots anywhere, and you do. I know this. Spoiler alert, I know Kirk.
Yeah, I feel, yeah, Kirk's trying to, I don't know, do you think it was supposed to be a softball, or do you think he's trying to get the word out about ascots?
I think he was just like, Brett's going to love talking about this for 30 minutes.
He's right.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
I think the sum it up, ascots are a really great fit if you are a villain.
But
if you're not, consider taking them back from the villains.
Yes, and this is honestly, that ties into the big question of like a lot of the point of this podcast.
You want to talk about detoxifying?
Yeah.
Well, let's hold off on that, because okay. I think that's a big let's actually go in order. I think the next one is a good one, because it's kind of a similar thing. I'll read it. This is from this is from Alabama Laid, which actually is a really nice, I like that. Anyway, Alabama Laid asks, in the Mitchell Moss episode, when you both said that only tourists go to the cowboy shops to buy boots and Nashville locals don't, is there some piece of clothing that Nashvillians would wear? Nashvillians?
Yeah,
Nashvillians
no, yeah,
would wear. That is uniquely Nashville, or would you identify them to you in another, or would identify them to you in another town, city, or country?
And this is a thing I'm definitely going to ask of more Nashville people, because this is fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly, I think it's all sports affiliated. Because I think that,
like the thing that would, that Nashville, wait, first of all, is it Nashvillians?
Nashville, yeah.
Or what's the right adjective?
I think Nashvillians is what I have said in the past.
Nashvillians? All right, that sounds okay. So not villains. All right, Nashvillians.
But hey, I mean, no, Nashvillians is probably the name of a good post-punk band. Garage band down in Tennessee right now, I'm sure.
But you're saying basically the thing that would identify you as from Nashville outside of Nashville is
if you're wearing like a UT Vols something, okay. Or you know, I mean, like to bring it up to like my level, if you're wearing a vintage, like I don't give a fuck about sports. But I could see a world where if I found like a 1970s UT Vols t-shirt, I would definitely probably buy that. So in that
is
case,
that what's the design it like? I don't even know what.
Well,
the...
UT's colors are orange and white, so it'd mm-hmm. probably be like a white shirt with like some, you know, the UT, the T inside the U symbol, mm-hmm. Or it might have Smokey on it, the Bloodhound, blue tick hound, I think. But yeah, so we talked about like because when I think about Nashville. I think when people think of Nashville, they do think country, western, you're basically going to the hoedown, going to the square dancing, which the Nashville I remember and the Nashville that I exist and the Nashville that I see on the Commonwealth, the Instagram page is not that at all. So that's why I think we said like, yeah, tourists are the ones that will go there and be like, I'm getting the real Nashville experience. I bought a cowboy hat. But it's like people that live in Nashville don't. Do that because you know like unless you work in the country music industry, and even then I feel like that's like an affectation that only a few people would actually still have.
Do you think this is really unique to Nashville?
No, like, I think it's probably an entire South thing.
Well is this kind of a thing of every place where it's like the sort of the exaggerated version of it to everyone on the outside?
Well,
is
it's
like
coming to New York and going to Times Square and being like, yeah, I saw New York, and it's like, yeah, you saw part of it. Like,
yeah, well, but just even to talk about clothing, I guess, like what's the yeah, I don't know, are there other versions of this? I got like to ask, because I think what's really being asked here is like, is there something clothing wise that is uniquely Nashville? And I feel like you're right, the sports thing definitely, I mean, I feel like that's a correct answer, but I feel like that's probably true of like
every city with a big, yeah.
Yeah, like that's, and like maybe that is like the you know, it's like, oh, you just have a shirt with the logo of something that's only in that region and that identifies you as being in that region.
I do think there is a Nashville look.
Okay.
Because like when I, so, you know, Nashville was recently hit by a whole bunch of really killer tornadoes that destroyed a whole lot of chunks of downtown Nashville, including like one of my friend's donut shop that they run.
Hmm.
Like the store is still okay. East Park Donuts roof is gone or something, you know, so like it was horrible. And we're not talking about it because of everything being even worse than that. It's the thing. So I was like, I want to wear something Nashville, you know. I was feeling my roots, and so the thing that I, you know, wore, you know, was my black jeans, my Levi's denim, like Western shirt, an ascot, because that's not Nashville, but that's just me. And then the Levi's trucker jacket that I bought when we went to the mall, the one with the like fur or the like lamb's wool faux collar that we bought when we went to the mall in Jersey a couple weeks ago. Yeah, and I wore that. And I think also my like brown boots. And that to me, like Nashville to me is very denim, which I think is obvious, like very cowboy. It sounds like I'm going back on my, we don't dress like cowboys. We dress like cowboys, but it's in a more subtle way. Yeah.
It's that's not the same. Cowboy, getting your boots from the cowboy shop is very different than just like denim.
Chukka boots. Or like
for some reason, when you said black jeans, that like popped in my head, and I don't even know what the reference is, but is that a big part of it? Black jeans?
To me, that's a very Nashville thing. That's also like a very rock and roll thing. See, because to me, Nashville is like a cool rock, like hip town. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even really associate modern Nashville with country music. I associate it with Jack White, who is from Detroit, but then moved to Nashville 15 years ago or whatever. But then also, my experience of Nashville was in college going to Nashville to see rock shows, to see like the local, you know, post-punk and rock and roll bands. You know, Kings of Leon is from the area, and they're a very hippie, you know, southern rock group.
Hmm.
So I have that kind of connotations when I hear Nashville style. That is not like the Kenny Chesney, Blake Shelton strain. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Hooray. Just my rant over, I think, right? I answered that, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't even call that a rant. I know, okay. No, that's and I think you make a good point too about like it being kind of more the more authentic thing is really the thing that is more inclusive, right? Like usually the big exaggerated, you know, the cowboy boots and whatever is like a very, very narrow slice, if anything.
Yeah.
But there's still some distinctiveness in the more broader thing. Just yeah. Like more music, more. No, I'm wondering if we should talk about nostalgia or
sure.
or go into talk. What do you want to talk about? Toxicity or nostalgia?
Jesus Christ. Nostalgia.
All right. Well, so John, is it John Trouter or John T. Reuter?
Yeah.
John T. Reuter of spelled like the Reuters news service. Is the growing popularity of vintage clothing related to the culture's current nostalgia?
I would say, yeah. But I also think it is tied to sustainability and environmental causes as well, because that's become such a big part of fashion and style. Talked about that in the Kelly Dempsey episode, because she goes to thrift stores. She, if you follow Project Runway's Kelly Dempsey on Instagram, you'll see that she goes to Goodwills and thrift stores and buys like old windbreakers and like, you know, those like 90s two-piece sets that we all wore. And it turns them into like hoodies and purses and like crazy stuff. So I think that a lot of vintage clothing wave is tied in with realizing, like, there's already enough that we don't need to keep buying new things.
Do you think if you're taking a windbreaker and making it into a purse, are you, like, at what point is that not vintage anymore because you're, like, actually producing something new? Like, do you feel like is that really still vintage?
No, it's probably a new. There probably is like an actual technical like thing of like once you've changed 40% of the item, it is now new. It is no longer vintage.
Well, like, yeah, I'm not talking about like tariffs. I'm not talking about tariff schedules though. I mean, like, I'm saying like what? I mean, this is 100% your opinion.
No,
but do you think? Do you feel like that's still? Would you separate that out as being like? Because I think there's a difference between saying like I'm. You know,
upcycling. I think, yeah, I would separate it out. I think they are two separate things. I think it's all part of the same urge to consume more responsibly. Mm-hmm. But I also do think that I do wonder, and again, like being a newcomer to this and just being a person with opinions and thoughts that don't stop, what the actual cycle is. Like, were people not that into vintage as recently as a year or two ago? The first episode of this podcast was with Jesse Thorne of Put This On, and he's, you know, all about vintage. Uh-huh. I think he almost shops exclusively vintage, it seems. And a lot of the things he talked about was how when we, you know, things that were made in the 40s and 50s were actually made to last, whereas things now are made, you know, H&M clothes, Forever 21, like fast fashion is like made on the cheap out of cheaper materials to just be literally fast. Like it's on the runway and then 2 weeks later it's in stores. A knockoff version is in stores for you to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not made to last, which is true, because when I heard Adam Ruins Everything did an episode about this, and we talked about it, I think, in his episode, that was like his episode was where I really learned about fast fashion and was like, oh yeah, that is right. All the clothes I buy at like Target and H&M, they do not last that long. And it was like finally putting a name to a thing I had experienced, but didn't actually know that that was a real thing. Because I remember buying shirts. Like I found a really good flannel shirt that I loved at Target that was like a good classic, like, I think it was like a red and black plaid for Christmas, you know? And then I washed it like once and it immediately like took it out and it was just like shriveled and shrunk and just like all sorts of like fucked up. And I was like, oh, okay. It did not withstand wear at all.
Yeah. And if you don't really realize that that's part of the production of it, you kind of end up feeling like, oh, you did something. You just messed up your laundry. Right? Yeah. Like,
so I wonder
then, I wonder if you could actually make an argument about the reverse to say that, so I mean, the question was like whether is nostalgia actually driven by the fact that clothing from these periods is still around because it was made to last,
yeah.
and so like the presence of it is driving the like feelings for it,
yeah,
as opposed to simply being like, well, you know, a certain number of people were, you know, young and impressionable at that point, so they have all these like warm feelings about it, and that's why they like want to buy things that remind them of it.
I think it is probably a lot of the former, because people are usually nostalgic for items that were out before they were born. like when you say vintage menswear, you're that conjures up to me like 1930s to 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
And these are not baby boomers and greatest generation people. Wait, hold on. Silent generation, right? Because greatest generation, silent generation, baby boomers.
Well, I think you gotta take into account that like when we talk about what 30s or 50s, that's the version of that that we saw on TV when we were like, you know, 10 years old, yeah. Right? And so there's this kind of weird thing of like, it's not necessarily your feelings about it are tied to the, like, your feelings about that era are driven by the media,
yeah,
like you end up having to sort of like jump around different time frames, because it's like, it's how, like, you know, how the 1980s felt about the 1960s, before,
when
right?
People say like we want to go back to, you know, make America great again, they're talking about making it like it was on the Donna Reed show, because the 1950s were also tumultuous. There was, you know, there were gay people in the 50s, there were black people in the 50s, there were Latinx people in the 50s, they just weren't on television. And so people are like, we're gonna go back to the way it was. It's like, no, you're gonna go back to the way it was on TV, which was racist and sexist and homophobic, etc. It's that same, I don't know, that's a tangent, but but that's also tied into how I feel about, and I want to get more vintage clothing experts on to try to help work my brain through the undying, unyielding, overwhelming affection I have for the 60s and 70s and the also guilt I feel for being nostalgic for a time period that I could not have lived in, because for one thing, the smoke would have killed me. Second, I would have had to marry a woman. Like, because when I see like men nowadays who are younger than me, who are in their early 20s, who are going and buying nothing but like 1940s like shirts and Fred Mertz pants and, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, well, How do you divorce the adulation of yesterday from the atrocities of yesterday that we are now very, 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 very aware of? Because when you make a period piece now in 2020, you do have to address that stuff. Where I, at least in the circle, oh god, this is getting really,
well, you kind of do, here's the thing, if you don't address it,
critics online will address it.
Well, that's the thing, to do it,
yes,
and yeah. There's plenty of evidence that you can avoid it, and maybe you avoid it because you don't even know and you're, you know, out of ignorance, or because you don't care, but that's a choice to do it, And I think that's like, I think knowing that works two ways. One is that like, if you realize that and you make a choice to do it, then I think that frees you up a bit to figure that out, to like say, okay, I like the way this outfit looks. And I'm going to figure out how to like address that.
Yeah.
And I think on the flip side, like if you're going to be critical of somebody, you can also like be a little more generous about that, you know, from that perspective too. Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting, you know.
Well, okay. So I feel we're sort of approaching the territory of the next one anyway. So let's ask Brett. What? So this is also John T. Router. Do you know John, or is he?
You know, he asked. He's a number one fan.
Okay. So you can interpret what he's what kind of answer. I feel like he's asking a bunch of really good like journalistic questions.
He is a journalist. So.
So Brett, what do you think can and needs to be done to detoxify traditional menswear?
Yeah, the trad, Ivy style, etc. movement. So this is a thing that we talked about a little bit with like the Tucker Carlson thing. Mm-hmm. I talked about it a bunch in the Jesse Thorne episode. This speaks to the mission of this podcast and why I started it. One of the reasons why I started it, and also why I wanted to have Jesse Thorne on first, because I felt like that would set the tone for it. Because politics and clothes are inextricably linked, just how politics are inextricably linked to all facets of our lives, and to act like they are not at this point to me feels like being complicit in shit. and so that's why, and that's not to call out any other, you know, podcast that does not do that or shies away from it, because I also totally understand the need to maybe in these hellish times have a space that is void of these tackling big issues if they come up, and not like I'm even qualified to tackle any big issues if they come up, but it is a part of the foundation of me thinking about clothes and how I dress and stuff is dealing with the fact that the perception of people that care about how they look are, you know, Roger Stone, Tucker Carlson, like they're, and from what I've learned by digging, you know, even a couple of layers into the sediment of menswear history, a lot of, you know, alt-right Nazi-y people really care about this stuff and run popular websites that I don't go to, because again, I'm not like, I'm still kind of feel like an outsider in this world, so I don't know. And why I follow think, people what, I the what
why do you think those are like why are those connected, or like why do you think there's a correlation between
Way the correlation comes up usually, and I see this from menswear people that I follow on Instagram that are liberal, as I am, and will respond and actually like get into the muck of arguing with these people. It does feel like there is a foundation of, you know, patriarchy, men are under attack, honoring traditional values with traditional style of dress, you know, men wear this, women wear that, like men need to be strong, you convey strength through wearing these silhouettes and following these very rigid rules, and because a lot of menswear, and we like, is a lot of it is about measurements and proportion and rules, like very, very, very strict rules. That's why the whole blazer sport coat thing is a thing, and why, like what you were saying about people learning sets of rules and then not understanding that that's just one interpretation. That is a lot of what I've discovered is what menswear gets into, is like a lot of fucking like really rigid rules shit. That thankfully I do not experience. Like I only experience it through the hosts of podcasts or bloggers that I follow that are always like, why are people so hung up on rules? I never see the people doing the attacking, but I always see the people that I feel in line with responding to the attacks. Like, this doesn't matter. Wear whatever you want. Have fun. Like,
that's interesting. I feel like there is, I mean, there's definitely a, there's definitely a comfort in being told this is the correct way to do it.
And
especially
if you do
something you're like kind of iffy about, like you don't quite get, and then someone's like, this is the correct way to do it, and here's a system for you to follow, and follow it, and you'll get the outcome that you want.
You'll get the wife and the job and the...
Yeah. And people question, that's the thing, right? It's like here's exactly how to combine these articles of clothing is like a very small scale version of that. And yes, and the bigger scale version is like, do these things to get a job, to
get the promotion.
Marry somebody. That's where it's interrelated. And I guess like maybe there's something about, I don't know. I guess maybe, the more, once you get into, you know, if you're buying things off the rack, there's less choices and decisions and rules to follow, which sort of frees you up a bit. But then, the more work you put into like getting things tailored or measured or combining things, or like the more effort you put into it, the more you're confronted with those decisions, and it becomes very comforting to have somebody tell you what the right answers are rather than you having to figure it out and risks that you're going to actually go out and make a statement that maybe you didn't make the statement that you wanted to make, or you didn't realize, and that can be scary.
And it feels very, very correlated in like, so in terms of like gender expression, what people who are like non-binary or trans, like all they're basically trying to say is like, I'm a person, I'm a human being. Here is how I perceive and express my gender. Can you just be cool with that? Like, it is such like the most basic ask of just like, hey, my pronouns are they, them, or she, her. Cool. Like, you know, and then like it's like the simplest ask. But for some reason, the people that are resistant to that are the ones that were told, no, you were born with, you know, you're born this way. You can't change that. And you're trying to change. Like. And so like the response is like this, like magnified, like, how dare you attack the institution? It's like, no, I just want you to treat me like a person. And I think that like you magnify that down, you anti-magnify, you extrapolate that down to like clothing, and it's like, just, you know, express yourself. Like, wear what you want to wear. But no, you're supposed to wear these types of shoes with these types of pants. Like, that kind of thing. And I don't know, like,
I'll tell you something personal.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I didn't even think about this when we started, but like I have started wearing suspenders because I think they do a better job of keeping my pants up than belts do for my physique. And I'm kind of, and I started doing this like in winter where I'm wearing them like under another shirt or piece of clothing or something. And like, you know, like often it's like I'm wearing, so I don't know if this disappoints anyone listening to the podcast, I am terrible. And I I'm not really embracing what the project of this podcast is, but, you know, but I'll be wearing them under, sometimes I'll wear them at, you know, to work. I'll be wearing a t-shirt. I do the t-shirt hoodie thing a lot. So I'll have them on over a t-shirt, but under the hoodie. And I've definitely felt kind of self-conscious about taking that. As the weather gets warmer, I'm like, people are going, I'm going to take this shirt thing off and I'll be a dude wearing suspenders over a t-shirt. And it's like, I don't think it even looks bad or anything like that, but it definitely like, it's unusual.
Well, it is a statement that, like, your statement that you're trying to make is like, I just want my pants to stay up, but other people see it as like a statement of like, oh, that's not what anyone else here is wearing.
What's the thing is, I don't want to make it. I mean, I don't really need to make it. I don't want to state that my pants need to stay up. I don't like, that's not really part of it, but the fact is they exist and they're visible. So they do say something whether I want them to or not. And actually I'm in the situation of, I have three pairs. And it's like, oh, okay, well, like, what should they look like? What color? They're a canvas, right? It's like a necktie. They look like a thing, so there's a decision about what colors, you know, whether they should have a pattern or not, and so on. And it's like, it's become this thing. But I'm feeling now a bit of anxiety of like, okay, it's getting warmer, and I've got to figure out like how I want these to look. And it's definitely a thing where it's like, I don't, and there's a little bit of resentment of like, I don't want to have to figure that out. And if somebody told me, like, here's the correct rules, and if you follow these rules, no one will hassle you, like, I that sounds really appealing.
Yep.
And that's definitely and that's the bit of all of us that's like, you know, fascism, it's not so bad. They tell you what to do, and like, you don't have to think about it. And like, you know, it's like,
and
it's
how
a
dare
bargain.
Anyone question. Yeah.
We were asked, Brett, you have been asked, what can and needs to be done? How do we fix this?
Talk about it. That's my point of view. Talking about it directly and indirectly, I think both ways are absolutely fine, because I also don't want people to talk about things they don't feel comfortable talking about. Hey, okay, great. But I also think not shying away from it. So, like, I know for me, like, even with the name of the podcast, I was like, this is a gay name. The name of the podcast is a pun on a way that people used to disparagingly subtly say that someone was gay. Like, it's so, part of me was like, do I want to start a menswear style fashion podcast where the name is inextricably linked to queerness and gayness? And I was like, well, I am gay, so who cares? And part of me, and then it's also like, if someone doesn't want to listen to the podcast because of the name of the podcast, they're not going to like the show, because I'm also going to talk about my husband and being gay, you know? So I'm trying to detoxify things by talking about them in a way that shows that other people also think about this stuff. Other people also want to wear fedoras, damn it. Like, Paul F. Tompkins has great hats. I also want great hats. I have no great hats, partly because m'lady men have ruined hats. And I want to change that. And I think you change it by doing it, by saying that, no, this isn't your domain, this is my domain as well. It's everyone's domain. Everyone is welcome to wear whatever they want to wear. And I don't know. I think the way we detoxify, and even like subtle things of just, you don't even have to say, like, you know, vote for Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders, which I am saying, vote for the dim. Like, I will say that eagerly.
Okay.
Other people don't have to say that, but you can do things like, if you do believe that, you know, trans men are men or trans women are women, you can just say, you know, you can say tinier phrases like, oh yeah, like, people of all gender expressions can wear this, or, you know, you can work language. You can say he, she, they. You can just stop saying, like, you know, things like, whatever he or she wants. You can say whatever they want. Like, just, it is really, it can be, in my opinion, as small as that. Like, those inclusive little tiny signifiers actually do go a long way towards making people feel welcome in a world and a community, which is, I don't know, I hope we're fostering a community. That'd be nice. Does that make any sense? Like,
yeah,
it's small. Yeah. It's like the smallest of gestures. And I can speak to this as just being a gay man. Like, if I'm in a group of men and someone says, like, yeah, all of our wives or all of our girlfriends, like, I know they're not being malicious, but I also know, like, oh, that immediately, like, plucks me out. Even if I know they mean spouse, that still, like, does a little bit of, like, mental clicking in my head of, like, oh, no, okay, you have to A to C it. Whereas if they just said spouse, significant other, great. I know I am not, like, I don't even have to do that math, which I think is I think that's a mental calculus that a lot of, you know, cis, straight, white, Christian men don't ever have to do, because they're very rarely excluded from things. And it isn't only until recently when the excluded class have actually been able to be like, hey, we're being excluded, and that they don't like that. They don't like being called out on it.
No, well, definitely.
There's a lot. I just said a lot of stuff.
I think what you said is that, I mean, this isn't a thing where it's like, well, if everyone does this thing for the next 2 weeks, we'll fix it.
Are you talking about coronavirus?
all that too. But no, but the point is, like, it is. It's a lot of little things, and it's a lot of little things over a long time, and it's a thing you got to chip away at.
Yeah.
It's not that there's any big fix. And I think, you know, yeah, well, if you just deal with it as like a lot of little things, and you think about what your the words you use, and be mindful.
Yeah.
I think that's the trick, and then slowly things get better.
Big and small, having empathy, also knowing, like, fighting the battles if you have the capacity to fight them. Me personally, if anyone doesn't like any of this stuff they say and come after me, my thing is always block immediately, don't think about it. So that is, whereas Ben is a happy warrior. Was that Joe Biden's nickname or something? The happy warrior?
Happy warrior. That's a thing.
Something. Whereas you actually, on Facebook and stuff, you actually know how to engage with people of different ideologies with a open mind, or like an even or a more even temper. So basically, I think the way we differ is, like, if we are both confronted with an opposition, I go to 11 in my brain, and I can't think straight, and I can't formulate arguments, and I just shut down, and I just say, like, no, like, I can't. Whereas I think that you don't lose that lucidity or whatever, that, like, grasp of facts and rational logic. And so then you're actually therefore able to articulate, like, my brain goes blank. Yours doesn't. So know if anyone comes at you about men's wear rules and it makes you angry, recognize that and realize you don't have to fight with them if you don't want to.
I appreciate you saying that about me. I feel like I don't know. So first of all, like, I am not perfect and definitely go through that. And it's definitely been a learning process of, like, okay, I get pissed off. Don't write the first thing that comes to mind.
That's true.
But think for a minute.
So you've already done more than I would do.
Well, I feel like part of it is, so here's the thing. You tell me if I'm being, this is egotistical of me, but I feel like I am, I am cis, straight, and white, and I feel like I,
you are half Egyptian.
I found out, we did the census yesterday, and they explicitly call out Egyptian as under the category of white. So I've been fully included in white, even though my dad had fairly dark skin.
Yeah, I feel like I would never qualify him as white.
It's a social construct, Brett.
It totally is. I don't think father lived life as a white man.
Well, the fascinating thing is he didn't really live it as, like he was, you know, he did immigrate from the continent of Africa, but he also, like, didn't really, like, I think if you call, like, was he black? I don't think that's really accurate either.
Right.
Asking people to categorize him is, well, I don't do that very often, but I feel like that's, like, anyway, I don't want to wander off the point is I definitely don't, I'm not personally, I can do it. It's not personal. I can confront people on things that are not necessarily personal for me. And I feel like I should, if I can, because it's good to not have to, for every, like, you shouldn't be fighting every fight, Brett, about that stuff. And I think it's good for other people to see that it shouldn't always have to be, like, members of a community or the only people who have to speak about it. And I don't know. And it is kind of a game. I think the thing I've learned the most is to figure out what are we talking about and stay on that topic and don't let ignore when people, like, because that's the thing, right? People throw out all sorts of unrelated crap. And if you just ignore it and hit on the point that you wanted to make.
What are you saying?
Yeah, it's, and what the thing that actually is, I have no idea, but here's the thing. I have a ton of, I know there's, like, I'm friends with a lot of people on Facebook that never click like on my posts. And then occasionally, and I mean, like, once every year and a half, someone I'll have a message or something with someone out of the blue, and they'll be like, hey, I like what you post, like, thanks for what you post, or, like, I like the stuff you put on Facebook, and they've, like, never liked any of my things. So it's like people are watching. Just because Facebook has these mechanisms for people to, like, click and indicate that they've read your thing, there are people that are reading your stuff that are not actively doing it. I don't know. I don't fool myself into thinking that I am doing any kind of great, like accomplishing anything great, but I do. The fact that you gave me a little bit of a compliment there makes me feel very good, because I do feel like it is something that, yeah, that I like. It's also fun sometimes, so I feel like maybe I'm just entertaining myself in the end. But
well, see, this is where you are a good advocate for this kind of thing, whereas myself, I am already terrified of, like, what if we get a bad iTunes review because I said, you know, liberal things. Like,
yeah,
that's where my mind is immediately going, like, what if I get doxxed? Like, that kind of thing, which is insane. Because that just means people are paying attention, which, leave review, you know, 5 stars, please. but also, like, I am also, like, so non... I can talk a big game with you and, like, people that I'm friends with and know I'm on the same side as, but, like, I would never have... I would knowingly never have someone on this podcast that, like, I would never have, like, a Roger Stone on this podcast, even though, like, you know, a shame of mine is, like, I do like 60% of the things he wears, even though he's, you know, an absolute monster.
Well,
one
yeah.
of the worst people to walk this earth currently. And I also don't really like the way that he wears a lot of it, because it is very, very, very Batman villain. As all the jokes say, like, you should just wear two of those things, not all those things at once, in my opinion. But I would never have him on. And, you know, because these are actually the kind of conversations I don't want to actually, like, have these conversations face to face with someone that is a, you know, traditional menswear enthusiast who is also Republican. I don't want to have that conversation, like, just because I know I would I have a temper. I'm not the best person to persuade anyone or make any valid points without just becoming a kind of asshole that I won't like myself having been in retrospect. Anyway, therapy session.
I don't know, did you just set up your own challenge for next week?
Jesus Christ, never. Jesus.
Let's get Roger Stone on the show and see.
Well, I mean, hey, he's not doing anything in jail, is he?
Are you allowed to record a podcast in those from like the phone, thing where it's like the phone through the glass wall?
Isn't there I feel like I saw a podcast, someone promoting a podcast that was hosted by people in prison right now. So maybe. I mean, he's also in, like, one of those, like, what, white collar crime? Like, he probably can do anything he wants, just not go outside.
Maybe, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. Okay, let's not, maybe not Roger Stone. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What's your, all right, I'm not gonna put you on the spot about trying to confront anybody, but I think the lesson about talking, talk about it and be visible.
Just trying to be
the key.
Yeah, good ally, be visible, have fun, first and foremost.
So what is your last question? This is like part of the format.
It's turning the tables on me.
John Router is basically co-hosting this now. What's your style challenge to yourself and listeners for this week?
I mean, so I do. I mean, I feel like we've had this so many times, but I feel like it is maybe more pertinent and relevant now of just actually do, like, get dressed up however you want to dress up and actually post a picture to Instagram, like, TBH. Like, and we have done this a million times before, but this is actually, as you were saying, it is kind of a self-care public service kind of right now, since we're all self-isolated. I don't know. I would just like to see more people, like, what's your work from home setup? You know, how are you trying to stay comfortable in these trying times? Is that too narrow and specific?
So just post a photo of your work from home.
No,
where?
Yeah.
What about people who are not able to do that, able to work from home or in that kind of situation?
Well, yeah. What are you going to work in? What's your work outfit? Yeah. What is your work outfit right now? Yeah. There you go. I mean, it's not really like a specific style challenge, but it is a cultural challenge. Foster a sense of community. It would also just be nice to see literally anyone.
Yeah, just share a photo so we can see you.
Yeah.
And see that you're okay.
And then also the other challenge is to like the podcast on Instagram at Enlighten My Loafers and leave a review in iTunes.
Actually, I wonder, should the challenge be to post a photo and to go... Actually, can I propose something?
Go for it.
I think
anyone's
made
it this far, yeah.
Post a photo and find someone else's photo and give them a compliment.
Oh, yeah. Foster a sense of community.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On board, drinking coffee.
And you can't, not everyone, you can't all compliment Brett. That's not fair.
Okay, if they can't.
I mean, you just spread it around, right? That's the point.
Yes, yeah, spread the love.
I mean, you can compliment more than one person. There's no reason why you have to be stingy. It's unlike coronavirus tests, its compliments are not in short supply.
Yes, they could be everywhere. So to wrap up, what is ahead for season 3? So, I mean, this is the other thing. Like, I think, should I do a shut-in season? Should season 3, should that be the official title, or should that just be what I'm going to refer to it as internally?
Yeah, I don't think shut-in is the right word we want to go for. The connotations there, like, that's...
I will say, I do think that, I mean, from the DMs I've been having with potential guests, it does seem like everyone's schedule is clear. So, if we have a really good season 3, it will be because we are all quarantined. Which feels very mercenary and bad to say, but, you know, I'm trying to make content to entertain people while we're shut-ins.
We're not making any money on this, so...
Very
it's
true.
We're not... This is not... We can feel very satisfied that we're being altruistic because we are...
This is an expense.
Yeah.
But otherwise, what would I be doing right now? I'd be on Instagram or watching the American Gladiators channel on Pluto TV. Do you have Pluto TV?
Pluto TV? I do not even know what that is.
Well, it's a free app, so just find it.
Okay.
It's Viacom now bought. They bought Pluto TV. And so they have all these just like, it's like 24 hours a day channels. And also like Buzzer is on there, which is the old game show channel. Right. But then also like there's an American Gladiators channel. There's an Unsolved Mysteries channel. There's an MST3K channel. There's a Drag Race channel. There's an Addams Family channel. I mean, it's great. There's a James Bond channel.
Once again, we do not have any sponsors. This is not...
Absolutely not. No sponsors.
Pluto or TV or Dwarf Planet.
No, yeah. Or Pluto Nash. But yes, do that. Thank you so much for spending a lot of time with us talking about a lot of frivolous and also serious issues. Please let us know what you thought, only if you agreed.
Send them to me.
I'm trying to be nice. Add Enlighten My Loafers on Instagram or enlightenmyloafers at gmail.com. Leave a review in iTunes. It'd be great because it helps spread the word for the podcast. And I'll read the review on the air. That is truth. Thanks so much to everyone. Right? I mean, that's basically it.
Yeah.
Enjoy your quarantine, people. That's a horrible sign off. Oh my god. I'll see you next time in your ears.